What if I told you that giving a team an unlimited budget and like absolute total creative freedom is actually the fastest way to guarantee they build a completely terrible product?
I mean, it goes against literally everything we are taught in corporate culture.
It really does. You have heard the phrase a million times. It is on motivational posters in break rooms. It gets tossed around in, every brainstorming session ever.
Yeah, it's pretty much the default advice for anyone facing a complex problem.
Exactly. I am talking, of course, about the mandate to think outside the box. We are just so conditioned to believe that constraints are the enemy of innovation.
It has basically become the ultimate cliche of modern problem solving. It is repeated so often that we rarely pause to process what it actually dictates. The assumption is that true genius requires a blank canvas, just completely void of any rules, limits, or, historical context.
But cognitively speaking, that is not really how we work, is it?
Not at all. A blank canvas is actually a nightmare for the human brain. When we are faced with boundless options, we suffer from profound decision fatigue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And ironically, we tend to default to the most obvious, uninspired cliches just to survive the cognitive load.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And it is exactly why we're pulling from some highly contrarian sources for this deep dive today.
For sure.
We are looking at the specific insights of Gavin Hoy from Left Field alongside this very detailed manifesto on problem-solving paradigms. And we are going to do something a little radical
I
today.
love it.
Our mission today is to completely flip this universally accepted cliche right on its head. We're going to prove to you that thinking inside the box is actually the ultimate shortcut to being highly effective.
It really is.
It is the key to saving a massive amount of time and, quite frankly, avoiding some truly crushing professional and personal disappointments. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Well, it requires a profound shift in perspective. Because when a manager or a client tells you to think outside the box, what they are fundamentally doing, whether they realize it or not, is encouraging you to forget your limitations.
Right, they just want the big ideas.
Exactly. They are telling you to ignore your boundaries and, quite dangerously, stray entirely away from your actual objectives.
Yeah.
It sounds like intellectual freedom. I mean, it sounds great, but in practice, it is a recipe for wandering off into the wilderness and building something no one actually needs.
So before we can even debate the merits of staying in the box, we probably need to establish what this infamous box actually is.
That is a crucial starting point.
Because why are we always trying to escape it like it's some sort of prison cell? When people hear the box, they usually just picture like boring bureaucracy or endless red tape.
That is the perfect place to start, because the foundational argument of our sources is that the box isn't a prison at all. The box is simply the brief.
The brief, okay.
Yeah, it is the uncompromising reality of the situation you are dealing with. The box contains your primary objective, your financial budget, the time scale you have to work within,
Right, all the fun stuff.
right, your essential technical requirements, your available resources, and your practical limitations. All of that makes up the box.
Wait, I am getting hung up on this though. Because if my boss hands me a tiny budget, a ridiculously tight deadline, and this strict list of requirements, how is that not just forcing me to settle for the cheapest, most boring option?
You feel that way?
I just have to push back here on behalf of anyone listening who prides themselves on being an innovator. That doesn't sound like a catalyst for creativity. It sounds like, well, settling for the status quo.
That is a very natural skepticism, and it is the exact reflex most creatives have when they hear this. But the insights from Gavin Hoy and the Problem-Solving Manifesto firmly debunk that idea.
Okay, how so?
Thinking inside the box does not mean discouraging innovation, and it certainly doesn't mean settling for mediocrity. What it actually means is fully understanding the objective before you allow yourself to become emotionally attached to a solution.
Emotionally attached to a solution. That is a fascinating way to phrase it.
It happens all the time in professional environments. I mean, think about it. A team goes into a brainstorming session. They completely ignore the practical constraints, and they just fall in love with an idea.
Because it's clever or shiny or uses some cutting-edge technology.
Exactly. The dopamine hits. They feel like absolute geniuses. But because they haven't defined the requirements first, they're falling in love with a solution to a problem that doesn't actually exist.
Or a solution the company simply cannot afford to implement.
Right. So the box doesn't stifle creativity, it focuses it, gives you a specific target.
That dynamic is just so common. It completely shifts the focus from what is effective to like what makes us look smart in the meeting. And to really drive home why ignoring the brief is so dangerous, there's this brilliant scenario outlined in the source material. Could you walk us through the car showroom trap?
Oh, absolutely.
Because this feels like the perfect illustration of what happens when we abandon constraints.
The car showroom trap perfectly captures the psychological devastation of boundless thinking. Imagine you walk into a high-end car showroom. You walk up to the salesperson and you simply say, "I want to buy a car."
Just that, no other details.
You offer no other information. That is your entire brief. You have deliberately chosen not to define the box.
Okay, yeah.
Now, a salesperson's natural instinct is to demonstrate the absolute pinnacle of what their brand can achieve.
Right.
So they bypass the sensible sedans and walk you straight over to the absolute top-of-the-range flagship model sitting in the center of the floor.
They're going to show you the dream.
Precisely. For the next 30 to 40 minutes, they give you the grand tour. They let you sit in the driver's seat. They demonstrate the unbelievable performance specs, the heated massage seats with, you know, the custom stitching.
Oh, man. The panoramic sunroof.
Yeah, they turn on the incredibly immersive surround sound system, demonstrate the autonomous driver assistance, the built-in cameras covering every blind spot.
Basically, a dozen other gadgets you literally didn't even know existed, let alone realized you wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as the customer, your brain is just lighting up. You can practically see yourself cruising down the highway in this thing.
You are completely, deeply, emotionally attached to the solution now.
You are thrilled. The dopamine is flooding your system. And then, well, the inevitable reality check arrives. You finally ask for the price.
And the number they give you is so wildly, impossibly over your actual budget that you physically flinch. It is not even a negotiation. It is just a flat-out impossibility.
The crash is immediate. You are profoundly disappointed. The salesperson just wasted nearly an hour of their time. You wasted yours. And here is the most insidious part of the trap.
What's that?
Now, every other car they show you that actually is in your budget feels like a miserable, depressing compromise.
Wow. Yeah.
The magic has been completely ruined. You look at a perfectly reliable, affordable car, and all you can think is that, well, it doesn't have the massage seats.
That is the real danger right there. It poisons the well for the actual viable solutions. That actually reminds me of a trap I fall into all the time in my personal life.
Oh, yeah.
It is exactly the same psychological mechanism as going grocery shopping while you were absolutely starving and you deliberately didn't bring a list.
Oh, that is the worst.
Right. You are wandering the aisles with no boundaries, no box, just pure hunger and boundless possibility. Everything looks amazing.
And you end up spending way too much.
Yes. You end up at the checkout with a cart full of incredibly expensive artisanal cheeses, 3 different types of gourmet chocolate, a jar of truffle oil, and maybe some exotic fruit.
Sounds delicious.
It does, but when you get home, you realize you have absolutely nothing to make for an actual dinner.
That is a phenomenal analogy because it highlights the exact failure of the core objective. You satisfied a momentary impulse for novelty, and you bought what looked impressive on the shelf.
But you completely failed the primary mission, which was to secure ingredients for a meal.
Right. You spent finite resources, your money, and your time on extraordinary items that were ultimately useless for your actual requirement.
You essentially built a beautifully engineered product that no one can eat. So if we apply this back to the car showroom, what was the actual failure point? Because the car itself was great.
The failure wasn't the car. You were right. It wasn't the salesperson's enthusiasm, and it certainly wasn't their product knowledge. The systemic failure was that nobody defined the box before they started exploring solutions.
Nobody asked the right questions.
Exactly. No one stopped to ask the foundational questions. What is the hard limit on the budget? Are you commuting 2 hours a day or just driving to the local store? How many passengers do you need to fit in the back?
Do you have to park in a tiny urban garage?
Right. Those questions are the raw materials that construct the box. And once the salesperson knows those parameters, they're no longer showing you everything that is possible in the vast universe of automotive engineering.
They are narrowing it down.
They are focusing all of their expertise into finding the absolute best solution that is possible for you. They are operating inside your specific box.
So we have established that limitless thinking without boundaries just leads to wasted time, scope creep, expensive cheese, and, you know, profound disappointment.
Yes.
But the sources take this a massive step further. They argue that strict boundaries don't just prevent failure. They are actually the primary catalyst for our greatest innovations.
It is so true. When you look at the fields that push the very limits of human capability, the box is what makes the achievement possible.
Like what kinds of fields?
Well, the text highlights several arenas where this is undeniable. Things like structural architecture, deep sea diving, space exploration, and advanced engineering.
Wow.
In these fields, you cannot just tell your team to think outside the box, because the boundaries of the box are dictated by the laws of physics, thermodynamics, or the fragile limits of human biology.
Right. You cannot walk into NASA and tell a space engineer, hey, don't worry about gravity or the vacuum of space today. Just let your ideas flow. Gravity is a rather non-negotiable parameter of the box.
And it forces innovation. If you want to put a human on the moon, you have an incredibly strict weight limit for the spacecraft. Every single ounce matters.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That intense constraint forces engineers to invent entirely new ultra-lightweight materials that literally did not exist before that project.
Mm-hmm.
The constraint birthed the innovation.
That is wild.
But we don't even have to look to space to see this. The most powerful example the sources provide is something sitting on your desk or in your pocket right now, the modern smartphone.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because if you ask anyone on the street, the smartphone is universally recognized as this absolute pinnacle of creative, revolutionary, blue sky thinking.
Oh, absolutely.
But the reality of its development is the exact opposite of a blank canvas.
It is arguably the ultimate historical exercise in constraint. The original designers and engineers working on the first mass-market smartphones did not have a blank check.
Not at all.
The brief, their box was an absolute nightmare of competing constraints. This single device had to function as a reliable phone, a seamless web browser, and a high-capacity music player.
All in one.
Right. But it also had to be affordable enough for a massive consumer market. It had to be incredibly user-friendly for people who had never used a touch interface before.
Which was huge at the time.
Yeah, and it had to be physically lightweight and thin enough to carry comfortably in a front pocket. And perhaps the most brutal constraint of all, it had to have a battery life that lasted an entire day.
Those constraints are constantly at war with each other, though. I mean, if you make a screen massive and incredibly bright, you immediately drain the battery.
Exactly.
And if you solve that by making the battery massive, you ruin the weight and size constraint. If you solve all of it with hyper-advanced military-grade components, you completely destroy the affordability constraint.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the core philosophy that Gavin Hoy and the manifesto are really trying to impart. The engineers didn't look at those brutal parameters, the price, the thermal output, the battery chemistry, and complained that these boundaries were stifling their creativity.
They embraced them.
They realized that an extraordinary idea, say, a phone that projects a 3D hologram, might technically exist outside the box. But if that phone costs $50,000, weighs 10 pounds, and the battery dies in 4 minutes, it is not a solution.
It is just an expensive science experiment.
Right. So a solution actually has to work for the person receiving it, not just look cool to the person inventing it.
Precisely. The engineers used those competing constraints to force their brains out of traditional paradigms.
To meet the battery constraint without adding weight, they had to invent entirely new ways for software to manage processing power, literally putting certain microchips to sleep for milliseconds between keystrokes.
That is unbelievable.
They focused their creativity into a laser beam, and the result was a product that fundamentally altered human behavior on a global scale.
So the constraints were the catalyst. Without that rigid box, they might have built a powerful, beautiful supercomputer that nobody could actually carry or afford.
Exactly.
Because they stayed fiercely inside the box, they literally built the modern world. That completely shifts how I view product development.
It changes everything.
But how does this apply if you aren't, you know, an elite engineer inventing physical hardware? What if you are just managing a standard corporate team or trying to organize a community event?
Well, the sources make a clear point that thinking inside the box is a universal discipline. It isn't exclusively about finding a creative solution in the artistic sense or an engineering breakthrough.
Okay.
It is simply about finding the right solution, using whatever your specific professional toolkit happens to be.
Right, because everyone interacts with the box differently based on their role. I mean, if you hand a project brief to a graphic designer, they're going to look at the boundaries of that box and apply visual creative thinking.
Exactly.
But if you hand the exact same box to a structural engineer, they're going to apply technical and mathematical knowledge to navigate those constraints. An accountant is going to look at the exact same box and try to find a financial mechanism or a tax structure to make the numbers work.
They all possess completely different skill sets, but the universal principle remains absolute. For every single one of them, you must understand the complete requirement first.
Before you do anything else.
Yes. Before the designer spends 10 hours sketching a new brand identity, before the accountant builds a massive 50-tab spreadsheet, they must intimately know where the boundaries lie.
That makes total sense.
But, and this is a critical nuance explored in the problem-solving manifesto. Just because you are operating strictly inside the box doesn't mean you assume all the walls of the box are made of concrete.
Yes, this part of the analysis fascinated me. The sources urge us to act as investigators regarding our limitations. We have to figure out which limitations are genuine, immovable realities, like gravity for our NASA engineers, and which ones are actually just assumptions heavily disguised as facts.
It is the difference between working blindly within constraints and working intentionally within them.
Right.
In a standard business environment, we have to interrogate the brief. You should be asking questions like, is this budget actually hard-coded? Or is there a contingency fund we can access if we prove the ROI?
Yeah, or like, are all 15 of these software features genuinely essential for launch? Or did a stakeholder just throw them on a wish list during a meeting?
Exactly. Could the timeline realistically be pushed back a month to ensure higher quality? Are we even trying to solve the right underlying problem in the first place?
Okay, hold on. I need to challenge the logic here because I can hear the friction in this. If I am sitting in a meeting, actively questioning the boundaries, I mean, if I am pushing back on my boss about the budget or asking the client for an extra month on the timeline or trying to negotiate away three of the features, aren't I basically just sneaking my way right back outside the box?
I hear you. That sounds exactly like rejecting the constraints. This raises an important question, and it is the exact cognitive trap many professionals fall into when trying to master this framework. It comes down to a fundamental difference, intention versus ignorance.
Intention versus ignorance. Walk me through the mechanics of that.
When someone relies on the cliche and thinks outside the box, they're usually ignoring the boundaries simply because they find them inconvenient.
They just don't want to deal with them.
Right. They pretend the tiny budget doesn't exist so they can pitch a glamorous high-status idea and look like a visionary. That is ignorance.
Okay, I see that.
But when you apply a methodology from our sources, thinking inside the box doesn't mean you become a passive victim of every arbitrary boundary handed to you.
It means you are active.
Exactly.
Huh?
It means you explicitly identify every single boundary, you seek to understand exactly why it was placed there, and then you intentionally and collaboratively negotiate them.
Oh, I see. It is like looking at a blueprint of a house. You aren't ignoring the walls. You are walking up to a specific wall, knocking on it, and asking the architect, is this wall load-bearing or is it just drywall?
That is the perfect metaphor. If it is a load-bearing wall, like a hard regulatory deadline or a physical limit of a material, you respect it.
Because you cannot move it without collapsing the project.
Exactly. But if it is just drywall, an arbitrary launch date set for convenience, or a budget constraint based on last year's numbers, you can absolutely advocate to move it.
You are just asking better questions.
Yes. You are asking better questions to create a shared, rock-solid understanding with everyone involved. Who is the end user? What is the core function this must achieve? What parameters have flexibility?
It is all about alignment. If you do the hard work of knocking on the walls and negotiating the budget up front, the box just got a little bigger, or maybe a slightly different shape. But the crucial point is that it is still a box. Everyone at the table still knows exactly where the edges are. You aren't going to disappear for 3 weeks, spring a massive unauthorized bill on the client at the very end, and defend it by saying, well, you told me to think outside the box.
Right. You define the box first in full agreement with all stakeholders, and then you unleash your creativity.
That is when you explore.
Yes. You use everything you know, all your hard-earned expertise, to explore every single possibility inside that newly defined space. If an idea works within those agreed-upon parameters, it is already on the path to viability.
Makes a lot of sense.
The sources are very pragmatic about this. An extraordinary, brilliant idea that cannot be afforded, cannot be delivered on time, or cannot be easily used by the target audience is not actually a solution. It is just a fantasy.
It is a harsh truth, but such a necessary one to internalize. So bringing all these threads together, the core synthesis for you to take away from this deep dive today is this: being told to think inside the box is not an insult to your intellect.
Not at all.
It is not about thinking small. And it is not a mandate to kill your creative spirit. It is about the relentless pursuit of the right solution rather than just the most impressive looking one. It is about professional discipline.
It is the discipline of relevance. Creativity that operates without relevance is just noise. It might be beautiful noise, but it doesn't solve anything.
Right.
However, creativity that is forcefully applied to a specific, tightly defined, well-understood problem, that is the exact mechanism of true innovation.
So what does this all mean for you as you head into your week? It means that tomorrow morning when you sit down at your desk or when you start sketching out a new personal endeavor or when you walk into a chaotic planning meeting, your first job is not to be a visionary genius.
No.
Your first job is to be an investigator. Do not brainstorm a single idea until you have defined your boxes. Knock on the walls. Figure out what is load-bearing and what is drywall.
Ask the hard questions first.
Because doing that rigorous work up front is the only thing that is going to save you from the car showroom trap. It is going to save you from spending weeks of your life falling in love with a brilliant idea that nobody can actually afford to build, ultimately saving you massive amounts of wasted time and deep disappointment.
And as you go out there and start rigorously defining the boxes in your own life and work, there is one final, broader implication of this framework that I want to leave you with.
Ooh, what is that?
We have established today that the box is simply the parameters of our current reality and our current available resources. But as we all know, reality is rarely static.
Very true.
So what happens when the underlying fabric of your industry shifts overnight? Think of a massive economic correction, a sudden global event, or the rapid disruptive advent of new technology like artificial intelligence.
Things change fast.
When the ground moves, does your carefully defined box just disappear entirely, leaving you floating in a boundless void? Or do you suddenly wake up one morning and find yourself trapped inside a completely different box with entirely new load-bearing walls without even realizing the rules have changed?
That is a phenomenal, slightly terrifying question to chew on, finding the new walls of the box when the whole room keeps spinning around you. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It has been an absolute blast unpacking the psychology of constraints and flipping this ancient cliche upside down with you. Remember to do the hard work of figuring out exactly where your boundaries are before you start running, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.